those experiences in the world and point to that as the problem and source of every problem we see in the world? And why is it that even as we're trying to do our best to sell, we start over-talking, over-analyzing, and just really not even speaking a language that the buyer can understand because we're so terrified of taking responsibility of any sale that we make? So now, I've given you a lot of insights. If those still exist, the self-love component, the healing component is really at the root of it.
Welcome to the Ambitious Tribe podcast with your chief encourager, Cassie Pajarillo. It's time to drive ambition and build a better business with a plan that's clear, transformative, progressive, and profitable. Now for your host, Cassie Pajarillo.
Here's the truth. Sales do get a bad reputation. And the only people that lose from the mindset are the good people selling great products. Just as what I say, great coaches and consultants or entrepreneurs are great in what they do. But those who get the clients are those who are also great in sales. Mm-hmm. In today's episode, we'll be talking about how you can shift the way that you see sales that will allow you to make more sales than you ever thought possible. And I won't deny it. I'm pretty stoked to have this amazing human with us. He will talk beyond transformation and the intervention and how you can actually embrace the best that you have to bring the world with ease, flow, and a mindset that will finally make you say, sales is love. And what's there to hate? Right? So they're driven and ambitious. Pleased to introduce to you one of the gentlemen whom I've worked with during the recent online Mind Valley University as the host of all the festivities. We've got Jason Campbell, the host of Mind Valley Superhumans at Work podcast and the mind behind Selling with Love. Hey, Jason, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. It's a pleasure to be here and I'm excited to share.
Well, this time around, I will be asking you tons of questions instead of you hosting. So I'm really pretty excited because I'm now talking to you instead of those, you know, those festivities that we had in Mind Valley. And I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to chat with Jason. But anyway, so Jason, let me ask you this. Who is Jason many milestones ago?
Well, depends on which milestone we're going to look at. But if I look at something that would be maybe before what most people know me about, which is, you know, my involvement with Mind Valley, my talks that I do around selling with love, Jason before was actually a real estate entrepreneur. And so back when I was in my early 20s, I was out in Canada and I got together with some best friends and we started buying condos in America back in 2010. This was right after the Great Recession that happened with the financial crisis. So we took advantage of a market opportunity. We learned a ton of ways that you can actually transact, buy, renovate, generate rental income with real estate property. Yeah. And this was a very interesting time in my life because at that time, I found myself buying into a program that was going to guide me step by step on how to do it properly and how to be able to transact these properties, not only to generate wealth for myself, but to also help a lot of people do the same as well. Unfortunately, a little later down the line, as I'm doing this program, I realized that most of the things that I had taught us was quite much in the gray area. I realized that all of the foundation that I'd built the business on might be not as rock solid as I thought. It was quite shaky, borderlines of maybe even calling this being part of a scam. And they put me in a studio. They made me record a testimonial right when everything sounded amazing about how great this program was, only to find out that the investor who was going to fund our deals disappeared. And we had to relearn everything we had thrown ourselves into. But except this time, we had almost $250,000 worth of real estate under contract.
Oh, my goodness.
And so Jason at that milestone really went through some tough times. I had to re-educate myself. I had to fix everything that was a loose end. And I actually went through a depression caused by stress in the process. But nonetheless, it's very interesting to look back in hindsight because I haven't kept in touch with this quote unquote mentor who walked us through this. Yet I get to understand that, you know, maybe I had it in me to make that transformation from this trauma to this unfortunate event to come out on the other side, being extremely knowledgeable about the real estate process, extremely caring to everyone that I had involved, which included family members into the process to make sure that they were taken care of the right way. And this is, if I look in hindsight, has been the biggest growth time of my life. Whether that was intentional for the people who did it or not doesn't matter. But the way that I could reflect back on that situation and choose the meaning that empowers me has been a foundation that pushes me to write the book that I've written, which is Selling with Love. Because as you mentioned in your introduction, people that take advantage of others through fraudulent ways of promoting themselves will not have a place in the market if the good people with the good products learn how to sell to.
Yeah. Wow, Jason, that's pretty traumatic. But how did you come out of that frame of mind that, okay, sales, this is what happened? I mean, not everybody can recover from that kind of trauma. And I think sales or money in general is something that people are fearful of, especially if their past decisions hurt them the most. So how did you transition or got that mindset that, you know what, this is changing me, this is something else?
I mean, I can only say this in hindsight, that it's not how I felt in the process, right? Mm-hmm. And so while I was going through this, of course, I was like, how dare they? And I, you know, you can't help but feel as a victim. But in my case, you know, there's a few key people that were involved that helped me get through this. So for one, I mentioned I had two business partners, and they were very strong pillars within the company that we had formed, which, you know, a bit of a hint towards a lesson here, which is if you're going to go into business with some partners, make sure there's some very complementary partners that can support you in the initial stages of growth. I also had my father, you know, come in. He had his own bouts with depression, had some awareness of it. And so he came to me and he's like, guess what? Your chemicals in your mind are actually not going too well. So maybe it's time you go see a doctor and see what you can do about it, because you're going through some very highly stressful environments. And, you know, I think, I don't know how it is in the Philippines, but I know like in North America, there's a bit more acceptance to asking for help, especially with psychotherapy, to put you back on a path of growth without having any of the stigma saying that you're doing this because you're broken, because you're crazy. And I don't know if that's the stigma that exists, but if that's the case, I think it holds a lot of people back from dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety that we all face every time. And asking for help is not a bad thing. And, you know, at the foundation of this, I think there's a core belief of mine that really doesn't want to disappoint people. Can be at a flaw. This can be taken a little too far. But in the practice where I actually wanted to make sure that every transaction with everybody that I did, I could do with utmost integrity, it made me work harder to figure things out and to find other people like Toni Singleton, which I always love naming her, because she went out and she re-explained to me the proper way of doing real estate transaction, which made me extremely knowledgeable in the process. And so out of this crisis, so many people came to my help, and I was willing and in a place enough to say, yes, please, I'd appreciate the help. And I think a lot of us might try to, like, you know, white knuckle it and not ask or take the help that's even being offered. But I think in a world that has, you know, all of its challenges, we can use all the help that we can get.
Yeah, I mean, asking for help and receiving help is not a bad thing. And thank you for mentioning that. People, aside from, of course, the trauma of money and all these things, I mean, help in general is sometimes it's scarce, or sometimes your ego gets, you know, hurt as well. And so asking for help, so that's actually a big thing. But Jason, you were in real estate, and how did you even transition into this world that you are now in Mind Valley, or even way before Mind Valley? What were the things that you had to go through that got you to where you are right now?
Yeah, well, one, you know, side note is when I was going through university, I had a chance to do a student exchange. Yeah. And to me, that was one of the best decisions I've done in my life. I was from a small town in Canada of 1,000 people. I went to the quote unquote big city of Ottawa, Canada, which sits at 900,000 people. Mm-hmm. And the biggest travels that I had done was maybe going to Florida on a holiday. I was in a very small bubble with very little awareness of how small the world really is. By chance, ends up applying for a foreign exchange program, and I ended up in Thailand. And I ended up spending 6 months not only to explore Southeast Asia for the first time, but also doing so with so many other people from different countries, ranging from Sweden, Japan. We had some people from Eastern Europe. We had some people out in America, in Latin America. So now here I was with people from every country around the world, around the same age, all studying business in Southeast Asia. And then I realized, wow, there's a lot more things that make us similar than different. And so that would be kind of the first step that made me realize that, hey, maybe working across the world is not such a big deal, because I'd have already been exposed to world travel and living within a foreign country. Now, fast forward, while I was doing the real estate, what happened after these events that I spoke about is the company that had worked with these contractors that took advantage of us actually turned around and said, well, Jason, since you went through all this and you fixed everything, we'd love to actually acquire you. And so I ended up working for a company and I helped them design the proper way of transacting real estate. Oh, so I redid all of their online education based on the lessons that I had had through the experience that was quite unfortunate, but like good, bad, who knows, right? So now all of this foundation allowed me to make sure nobody else had to go through the same experience as me because I connected them to the right people and taught them the right things. And in the process, we did a lot of online marketing and Mindvalley was looked at as the pinnacle of proper, ethical, amazing marketing. And so I was a big fan of the way they did their business. And while I was in Thailand, I realized that I'm only 2 hours away from Kuala Lumpur, where their headquarters is based. I ended up doing a short travel, visiting their office. And when I walked through the doors and saw hundreds of people, all looking highly intelligent, all working on things that look really cool. And I started thinking, wow, they're the real deal. I want to be a part of this. And so long story short, I applied right then and there. And a few months after, I'm in the office and I'm doing product launches, running the entrepreneurship division, put together events like Mindvalley U for the first time, launching a book from Vision, and running all the relations with the authors as well. And so it was a great journey for 7 years. And that's basically it in a nutshell.
You know, when Ezekiel and I met as well, when he flew here and guested for my event, for those who are listening, Ezekiel is the chief of people officer of Mindvalley. We were talking about how great Mindvalley is and that it's really great. It will be great to have Mindvalley more in the Philippines. And at the time when I invited, when you guys, I mean, Mindvalley supported me on my event. People really doesn't know what Mindvalley was, but I tried my best to copy or replicate the hall of,
awesomeness.
Yeah, the hall of awesomeness. I tried to replicate it. It went so well. And then that's when I remember when I told him, you know what? What really made me fall in love with Mindvalley wasn't because of Vision after all. It was, damn, you guys are so good in marketing. Mm. And it was like, yeah, Cass, finally someone who gets it. I was like, yeah, you're so good in marketing. It was ethical, just like what you said. It was ethical. You can feel the culture of what was happening. It's not a facade of I'm so great. And when I went to the office as well of Mindvalley, I saw how happy people were, like working out in the middle of the day. Like, how is that even possible, right? I mean, in the other parts of the world, that's not normal. But I think that was what I love about when you said that when you took the risk or when you took the decision to pivot your way to joining a company that is of good culture and ethics, I think that is really important in terms of personal growth as well. So when you did this product launches, when you finally got into Mindvalley, and then now you created your book, right? I would love to dig deeper on what are the things that, or maybe what are the greatest lessons that in the 7 years that you have pivoted, changed, you know, direction. What were the pivotal lessons that you've learned that you wish other people or other businesses, especially now the entrepreneurs are popping like mushrooms, right? Would have in their own, right? In their own organization or soon to be organization.
Fair. And powerful question too, because, well, interestingly enough, when I just started at Mindvalley, I had never done meditation or mindfulness.
Really? So and isn't it that Vision's number one thing?
I started at Mindvalley without even knowing what they were selling. I just said, hey, you guys are doing some cool stuff. You're marketing great things that I don't know about. I want in. And there was a lot of faith in that, but I was like, I feel like this is the right place to be and I'll learn some things. So I did learn a ton about the power of mindfulness. And so I was a go, go, go person. And I have a feeling if you have a lot of entrepreneur listeners, especially if they're in their early to mid 20s, you might be going one speed, go 100%. Don't slow down. When you slow down, you get left behind. If you get left behind, you will be broke, you will die, and you will never have success. It's kind of the autopilot track, right? And so I got into there and I started learning about mindfulness. And it didn't stop me from doing as much impact as I wanted. It amplified how much impact I could do. And so I started using visualization techniques, doing things like the six-phase meditation, and I realized the power that it held. It was amazing. And so one of the biggest things from just being in Mindvalley is learning about mindfulness, its powers, how to be more present. I also had, you know, very humbling experiences while at Mindvalley. And by humbling is like, here I was, mid-20s, hotshot salesperson who understood marketing, went on the product launch team, ran the entrepreneurship division. I was arrogant.
Yeah, wow.
I might still be a little arrogant, but a lot less arrogant.
Hey, we got to have a little bit of arrogance in us, right? You got achievements.
So. I mean, self-love is important.
Yeah, everybody. Self-love, dude. Yeah, no shame.
But I was blind to my own blind spots, really. Okay. And, you know, it's, I came with an energy when I first got there, and it was like, oh, bless Mindvalley. Look, they get to take advantage of all my intelligence, all of my like expertise. And, you know, I get to sell personal development product to these people that just can't figure it out. And thank God I have it all figured out, and I can help them figure it out by selling and marketing to them. Mm. And that is when the universe is like, ooh, you're wrong. Let me show you how wrong you are. And I think it was by the time I was like 28, 29, I really got slapped sideways into realizing that I had some issues I hadn't resolved. I needed personal growth. I needed to do healing. I needed to work on my traumas. I am just like everyone else, trying to figure out what the hell's going on this planet as we're working towards maybe doing the best we can in the most good fashion possible as we continue to even define what good is. It's confusing. And I think that was a big thing that I've had during my time at Mindvalley is I started realizing, hey, I need personal growth. I need a spiritual pillar. I need to see why I have certain emotions. I need to challenge the way I'm thinking. There are different ways of thinking. I have to appreciate people's differences. And then from there, I just came back from ground zero and said, I need to be a student. And I think keeping that student mindset is one of the things I always keep reminding myself of, because the moment I step into that space, I get to have a lot of growth without going so deep and being slapped pretty hard into the direction you need to go. You can start actually paying attention to the subtle hints that will always be guiding you along the way.
That is just so beautiful and strong, Jason. We are all students of life. And I think as we get older, we forget to be like children. Like our curiosity just suddenly shut out, right? And I want to ask you when it comes to being a student of life, because we're going to go circle back to, of course, selling. And this is really an important piece for us to talk about. But it's important too that we look back into these experiences. And as you said, it's healing. You're an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship is the best personal development you're ever going to get into. I think, at least for what I think. I don't know what it is that you think, but healing, it's such a big word. Healing and selling, I think, is correlational as well. Because again, when people are, this is my view, but I would love to ask you as well. When you've got past traumas, not everybody can be just like you who hurt yourself in real estate so much, right? Can heal themselves and go back up. But people, because of their past decisions, they tend to get scared, or they tend to fear of, number one, selling themselves because they're self-worth, right? Number two, it could be when they're purchasing something, they always have this scarcity mindset that, if I'm going to buy a bag, might as well buy something cheap, because what's the use of buying the original? Or maybe in selling themselves in their courses or programs, they would think, why am I going to ask for $5,000 if I didn't graduate in Cornell University or Harvard? So what is your take when it comes to self-worth and healing in order for you to sell?
Well, that's a very powerful question. I'm really glad you asked it, because I will assume that everybody listening here is a little more advanced than the average person. And by such, you have an understanding of what the role of self-love has in your success as an entrepreneur, as a salesperson, as a lover, as a parent, as whatever it is that you're living your life. It is going to be a major foundational block for everything you do. And it's not by coincidence that I actually have that as the last chapter of the book I'm writing on sales. Because before I get to tell you everything that you probably really need to work on as a foundation, which is self-love, which people go, self-love, Yeah, I got this. Woo woo. I don't need, tell me how to close a sale. I'm like, okay, I'm going to teach you this. And then once I've taught you all this, now what? Now you're going to start facing what are the fear of rejection. Now you're going to face what I call shame and guilt blockages. Why is it that we are terrified of following up? Why is it that the idea of being a salesperson brings so many emotions that are yucky? Why is it that we can only see the negative sales experiences in the world and point to that as the problem and source of every problem we see in the world? And why is it that even as we're trying to do our best to sell, we start over-talking, over-analyzing, and just really not even speaking a language that the buyer can understand because we're so terrified of taking responsibility of any sale that we make? So now, I've given you a lot of insights. If those still exist, the self-love component, the healing component, is really at the root of it. And just like how you say that entrepreneurship is one of those fields that when you get into, it's going to bring you some butt kicking, which is going to help you heal, which is going to help you grow. Selling, I find, has a very similar quality, because guess what? You get to do 100 calls in a day, for example, and you're going to face maybe 90 rejections. How are you with dealing with rejections? Have you ever wanted to heal from your fear of rejection? Well, try being rejected a high majority of the time in your job. I mean, if you're working, let's say, as an administrative assistant, and let's say that as you're doing such, you basically need to deliver a daily task. Maybe you're screening emails, maybe you're preparing research. And every time you finish, you get a thank you, great job. And you know, at the end of the day, you can check off a box and you've delivered on goods. Now, turn that into a sales role, and guess what? 90% of the efforts that you've made are going to be people that either ignored you, rejected you, didn't want what you had, and you need to go and show results at the end of the day. And here's where there's a huge, huge role that needs to be played by sales managers, because sales managers become emotional managers for salespeople that basically are going to be on a roller coaster of emotions as you're bombarded with this constant rejections, confrontation, all of these things. It takes skills to sell. But you want to be on a fast path to growth. I remember the first time I did a sales call. This is a good story where I was supposed to book appointments for a real estate agent. So real estate agents wanted to do appointments with buyers that were looking for properties. And they'd come on our website. They'd ask for a list of properties. I would email it to them, but I would call them first. So an example, I'd say like, hi, this is Jason from ABC Real Estate. I just want to call you to let you know that your list of hot properties will be sent by email in the next 24 hours. Is that okay? And this is a beautiful script. I just had to follow the point form. The first call I did.
Yeah.
I pick up the phone. I dial. I read that script. And the person just goes, okay, thank you. Bye. And they hang up on me. And then I'm like, I am not loved. I am forever alone. And I'm going to die. And that was my first confrontation with my fear of rejection. It's like, I want everybody to love me. Why did they hang up on me? I just read the first line of the script. And to make matters worse, my boss walks in right at that moment when I'm pink red like a lobster being boiled, and I'm shaking and almost crying. And he's like, are you okay, dude? And I'm like, yeah, they hung up on me. He's like, I promise they don't do that usually. I'm like, you're lying. You put me in a trap and everyone's going to hate me. And then eventually, I picked up the phone again, still not too confident. Picked up the phone again, a little more confident. Picked up the phone again. And by the time I was doing this job, it was every day at least hitting the phone 150 times. Out of 100 of those were no answers. Out of those, maybe I'd leave 10, 20 voicemails. Maybe I'd reach 20, 30 people. Maybe I'd have about 40% would say, call me back. I'd have a 20% saying, don't call me. And then I had a few who booked an appointment. And as I repeat, then enough appointments led to enough sales, and enough sales led to a lot of commission. And then I realized I was fully in control of my income and I didn't need to take rejections personally. And this is a part of the healing, is that, hey, if someone says no in a sales process, it's not you. It could be them. They could be not ready. Maybe you don't understand their needs. Maybe their needs is not right now, and that's okay. And so I think that's a big, big lesson that'll come specifically in sales, which is realizing you don't need to take things personally. And just start doing your best.
Hey, Driven and Ambitious, do you dig today's topic? Well, I'm interrupting my own episode to invite you to apply for the free private training through www.cassiepajarillo.com, where you get to learn how to have a powerful profile online as you turn your network into paid high-ticket clients with a plan. If you're still scratching your head on how to make LinkedIn and social media work for you, this training has helped coaches, consultants, private practitioners, and content creators adopt digital transformation, have systems, processes, and structures in their practice, and be amazing profitable CEOs online. By the end of the training, you'll walk away with a deeper understanding, implementable way forward, and a roadmap for your online coaching or consulting businesses that's clear, transformative, progressive, and profitable. Remember, there are no glass ceilings, and you can definitely prioritize work-life integration. Apply today at www.cassiepajarillo.com. Link is in the description box below. Can't wait to see you there. And now let's get back to today's episode. Yes. Something that I would always also tell my mentees or my students or wherever in my social, I would always say that eventually, you know, I learned to that business is just statistics. It's just a play. It's math. So don't put your emotions to what you're doing, but be compassionate and kind about it and put your heart into it and don't take advantage of it too. And people are always scared of sales calls. There are people who would say, oh, you know, you can be a greatest coach or consultant without sales calls. Yeah, you can do that, sure. But for me as a mentor too, which I've learned also with you guys, is that you got to still start from calling because you got to get to know your people from inside out. And it's truly essential for you to get into the rejection, to know what is the objection, to know what are their languages, what is going on into your head. And you're right. The rejection and objection may not be because of you. It could be because it's just not now, or maybe you're not communicating it well.
Mm-hmm. And now you have opportunities to improve. And that's okay, because what you did last time was your best for that time. And that's okay.
And that's okay. Well, thank you for mentioning that. And it's really, really powerful for people to understand, especially here in Asia, as you know, we were talking about backstage, that we really need to teach people to do sales that is not icky. So this is where the love pops in. So Jay, how did you come up with this? I mean, you've did mention about a little bit of your past many milestones ago and what you've learned along the way, but how did you come up with the entire concept of selling with love? It could be a lot of things, you know, selling.
Yeah. It's funny you ask that because there's a part of me that's like, I want to share you maybe one of my first sales experiences where I was selling chocolate for charity. And then by the fifth door that I went knocking to sell chocolate, the lady said, oh, let me ask my daughter if she wants chocolate. And the lady came down, was my age, beautiful, and ended up being my first girlfriend.
Oh, really?
So there's a very strong love anchor there. But that wasn't what got me to write this thesis or do this talk and write this book. What it has done, though, is maybe not have as many traumatic experiences in my early time in selling and realizing that it can be a beautiful and wonderful thing. You know, most people I ask about sales is what comes up to mind. They think about yucky, gross, manipulative. If I say who, they think used car salesman, manipulative stockbroker, you know, a-hole, like all Orson. These things come up.
Yeah.
And then at least at a foundation, I was like, you know what? That was actually a beautiful sales experience. I went door to door, I asked for chocolate, gave me $2. I was like, this is great. People are happy. I'm happy. Let's go. And, you know, I was working at Mindvalley and everybody was always about, you know, telling me, Jason, you love selling. You're like the person that like sells ice to Eskimos. And I would respond, I'd be like, well, only if they need it. Like, only if they need it. If you can sell ice to Eskimos, don't go and manipulate them. And it's a terrible expression, but still the point being said is that I can have the power to sell many things, but if they don't need it, if it's not necessary, there's a responsibility that comes with every sale you make. There's another thing that comes to mind when you ask me, where did this come from, right? And this is where I might go into a little more woo-woo. Are you ready for this?
I'm always ready for woo-woos.
Public speaking workshop is happening, and it's Vishen Lakhiani, founder of Mindvalley's mother, is actually a speech trainer in Malaysia.
She is. Okay.
He invites her to come and teach people public speaking because we did an exercise within the company where we wrote what our three most important questions are, which are, what are the experiences we want in life, what growth we want to experience, and what contributions we want to make. And it's saying that there was a high proportion of people that said they wanted to experience better public speaking skills. I was one of them. So she's running a workshop and we have to prepare a talk, and call it divine intervention, call it channeling, call it just, you know, coming up with something based on my experience, but I get in the car with my colleague and we're driving over to the office and I have my notebook open and I'm like, I think I want to talk about, like, I love selling. So what about selling with love? And I just started jotting it down. And I actually need to go and find the journal where I started taking these notes, because initially I talked about three loves in selling. And I went on stage. I still have the speech available. And I just went to do a 3-minute speech about why selling is the greatest expression of love. And I talked about the love for the client, the love for the product, and the love for the self. And my talk has evolved much through that. But it was at that moment that I went to do this talk out of an informal training. And then people came to me and they're like, Jason, that was excellent. Mm-hmm. Next thing that happened is I had an opportunity to speak at A-Fest, which is Mindvalley's flagship event. Yeah. Now, I'm little Jason Campbell here. I'm an employee at Mindvalley and being a volunteer at A-Fest to run the audio and visuals. I was at the back helping the speakers put their microphones on as a volunteer, okay? And I went to Vision and I said, I have an amazing talk I'd love to do on stage. And he's like, cute, maybe one day, but you're not a famous speaker, so no. And then I told him, if you put me on stage, I will deliver the greatest speech ever. Again, this maybe gives you a clue as to my passion around selling when I'm very confident about the value I'm going to provide. He's like, all right, we'll think about it. Speaker cancels last minute. They're looking for an additional speaker. I come to Vision. I'm like, this is a divine intervention. The reason he cancels is because you need to put me on that stage. He's like, Jason, calm down. But we got someone else who's driving into the country and we're going to put on stage. I'm like, well, just know that I'm ready the moment you decide. Again, another clue here is I was ready and I was assuming a yes, so that when the opportunity knocks, I knew I would be ready. That person driving in gets stops at the border and isn't given a visa. And so they can't even come do the talk. I stand in front of him. I have my thumb drive with the slides ready and the talk's happening soon. And I'm like, my slides are ready. I'm going to do an amazing talk. I just need 20 minutes. And he's like, fine. So
yeah,
that talk ended up being voted best talk of the event for 20 minute talk. And so again, I realized this power and I realized how much it would light people up. I practiced it. I acted as if this was the most important message that needed to be shared with the people. And the more I went out to share, the more people went, oh my God, I've been waiting to hear something like this for a long time. And so where did it come from? The ether, you know, subconditional programming. But what I've quickly realizes as I kept talking about it, it started attracting more people that resonated with the message. And I said, well, I need to make sure this gets to the masses. And that's why I decided to write the book.
Wow. I learned so much from that experience that you shared. Honestly, I was supposed to call one of my programs Selling with Love. And then I saw, let me just type that down and to see if there's a copyright, because that's the ethical thing to do, right? And then I saw, oh my goodness, there's a Jason Campbell who just did it. Who is this guy? And it says Mindvalley. Okay, girl, cute. Can't do that. But it's okay. So this is where, Drive Ambition, Serve Love happened. But I love it when you said that, number one, you take the bold move you went up to Vision and said, hey, dude, you need me. You just got to put me on stage. And not everybody has the guts to actually, you know, go into that kind of boldness, because people, again, in selling too, right? People are scared to be in front of a potential client or a potential opportunity because of, that's what you said, self-love maybe, or self-worth. But it's funny because you already have the presentation ready. Like, dude, you already knew it was going to happen. I think it was more of manifestation for you that once opportunity is there, I'm fucking ready for it. And I think that's what happened to you. So thank you for sharing that. You know, you guys, those who are listening, you're driven and you're ambitious. All you got to do is step up and just show the world that, hey, I've got this. So Jay, let's dive more into selling. Okay, first and foremost, how do you define selling now?
So selling, I define, I actually define with the following. Selling is an energy exchange between conscious beings. That's it. And energy gets exchanged. And I use the word energy consciously, not just because I appreciate the woo-woo, but because energy is really the unit of measurement that can encompass everything that gets exchanged in a sales transaction. And so what am I exchanging? You know, product or services. How are those created? Well, people have to put them together. It takes energy. Natural resources need to be put into it. That takes energy. And so regardless of what you're delivering, it can be an amount of energy that is put into making that a creation of value for somebody. Okay, perfect. What are you asking in return? Well, typically money. Money would be the most transactional kind of thing that would come back. And what is money? Nothing else but stored energy. It's stored energy. And this is why I think money is a beautiful thing. It's one of the greatest innovations of our species, because never before could we find ourselves having a mechanism that we can trust that actually allows us to store value at a very minimal cost. Like, imagine if you were trading eggs and now you have to do business with vegans and nobody wants your eggs. Your stored energy is worthless to be sold to vegans because nobody wants your eggs. So guess what? You go out of business. But then if you could actually sell while a bunch of carnivores come in and they want the eggs, and they give you, instead of giving you cows and you don't know how to take care of cows, they can give you money, which is stored energy. So then when you need to transact, whenever there is no people that are going to buy your eggs, now you're able to transact with this paper. We all have trust in its value. So that's one thing. But, you know, and there's a few more things. Like, I talk about time. Time is an energy that is active. Why is time more valuable than money? Because time expires the moment it isn't used. And so it takes time to deliver. It takes time to sell. And there's always an element of time and there's always an element of risk. And so I break it down in my book in all the different variables. But the most important thing that I add to the mix is emotion.
This is good.
There's an emotion in every sales transaction. And what is emotion? Nothing more but energy in motion. Yes. And so I break down in my book the major blocks of emotion that go into a sales transaction. And as an overview for everybody, they start with shame and guilt blockages, which is the idea of having any responsibility of any transaction is terrifying and you're completely blocked by it. Then is the second level, which I call the fear and pride paradox. And I call it a paradox because unfortunately it finds itself to be very effective, but this is when you sell from a place of lack, seeking validation, seeking to fill a void. And so you feel that for every transaction you make, you can feel better about yourself, but you're still not taking responsibility for the sales that you make. This is when you blindly sell, you make money, you need to make money, you still don't feel good about yourself. You find yourself with addiction issues, whether that's gambling, alcohol, drugs, sex. People find themselves really having a dysfunctional kind of relationship with sales. It's up, it's down. And it's really strange because then you start thinking, why would the person want to numb themselves? Is because we haven't taken the full conscious responsibility for every sale that we make, which includes an energy exchange. And that emotion, if you're coming from a fear and pride paradox, is a lower vibration that actually comes with a reality that we don't want to face. What if what we're selling isn't truly good for the people? What if the people were hurting? All these things that you need to care about. If you're selling from this place, you've decided to numb yourself to that awareness, which makes you effective at selling, but ultimately makes the world a worse place and makes you a worse person too. And so if you become painfully aware of this, then most people go to what I call the rational sabotage level. And when you get there is when you start being so aware of the responsibility of every sale that you're so terrified of the responsibility that you give more information, more data, you overtalk and you overexplain. And you're just like, hey, you know, if you want to buy this, you can, but if you don't, that's okay. And I'm going to be here and here's the data sheet and here's the facts. And I'm going to give you information, come and see me. You're afraid of taking the responsibility of a sale because you want to give that responsibility to the buyer. Because if something goes wrong, you can point the finger and be like, well, you're the one who bought.
And so
these are the levels you can graduate from, with the ultimate one being selling with love.
Responsibility. You know, a little fun fact, I was in real estate a couple of years ago, and that wasn't a good experience for me either. Not because I didn't like selling. I mean, oh my gosh, I love selling. But it's really more on the responsibility of you as a seller also, and of course, the company that you associate yourself with, to the extent that it's coercion. You know, I mean, I don't like it when, I mean, let's talk a little bit about ethics here. But what's your take when people would say, oh, you know, if you're going to do a sales call, make sure you don't hang up the phone and let them, you know, pull their credit cards and make sure on the spot you get to close them, right? So I mean, I feel that I tried that methodology. It just didn't feel right, right? So when they pull in their credit card, it feels like you're right. Emotions. It's like you're toying and playing with the other person's emotion because you're there. And people, especially in Asia, I think, are scared to say no. So that's why they're going to pull their cards, they're just going to swipe it. And after that, they're going to regret it. And then the next thing you know, you'll be like, huh, I'm a rich person, but in truth, you're being irresponsible. So what is responsible selling and what is ethical for you? Because ethical is subjective.
Mm-hmm. It's but very subjective. I give an example that makes it, at least gives you a litmus test, like a test to see, like, have I crossed the line? Because listen, I've worked on the floors. I've worked on phones. I've done some sales over the phones. I've collected tens of thousands of dollars over the phone. But the question again is, what is the emotion behind your incentive to be a pushy salesperson? Mm-hmm. Most people take pride. They say, I'm never a pushy salesperson. I'm going to be a very pushy salesperson if I know what I feel is going to be in the best of intent for you. And that's what love selling is about, is because you will use every tactic that is possible to make people truly understand the value that you want to provide to them. And when somebody says, I'm never pushy, I say, well, you choose comfort over conversion, which means you're selfish. Okay.
This is good, Jason. It is like a new thing that I'm hearing from the usual, don't be pushy. Okay, whatever.
But No. Yeah. I will push a sale if I like. Do you go to the gym sometimes?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
There's a sale that happens every morning that you decide to go to the gym, right?
Yeah.
The sale is your higher self and your lower self, right? And I don't know about you, but when I know I want to go to the gym and I have that lower self of mine saying like, well, you're so comfortable here. Do you really want to go to the gym? My higher self will say, Jason, brother, get your butt up, put your shoes on, get on that bike and drive over because you're going to go lift some weight because you know it's good for you. And I'm like, fine. And then I do it. Sometimes we need some tough love. And again, there's a litmus test that you can do because you might be like, well, Jason, where do I draw the line? Like, can I like, you know, yeah. I feel like this product is so good that I should go by gunpoint and tell people to buy it. No, that's wrong. What you can do though, is imagine you were a magician. Okay. And this example is silly, but it makes a point. Imagine you're a magician and you have a rabbit and then you're like, you have the hat and then, you know, you show the rabbit, you show the hat, then you put the rabbit in the hat and then you flip the hat and then rabbit disappear. And then people clap and they're like, wow. And then you're like, guess where the rabbit is, everybody. And they're like, where? And you're like, we murdered it and it's dead and decapitated. Made the sound.
Exactly,
people would go like, oh my God, you're horrible. That is offensive. Why would you kill a rabbit. And so here, if you imagine yourself doing a sale to a client, like imagine I'm selling to you. And let's say I'm saying it's a program, let's say that's about, helping you manage your finances. And then I'm just saying like, hey, listen, if you want to do this program, you should do it right now. Most people, when it comes to their finances, they make that decision towards the last minute. I have you on the phone right now, and I'm giving you an opportunity to make a decision now before it becomes painful and you start wondering where your money went. I can tell you, if you make this investment right now, you're going to realize that you've put your money into a foundation that's going to grow over time and you'll never regret this decision. And that's how I guide people through the process. Then you're like, holy shit, you're motivated. This was a good sales call. I'm like, I need your credit card. And guess what? You'll have 5 days to think about it. But by taking action now, you get all of the discounts and you made a decision that's within your higher self, not your lower self, which is what I want to encourage you to do. Boom, I get your credit card. I close the sale. And then the sale is complete. Imagine I need to tell you everything I did to make you buy. I need to open the cards. I need to tell you, by the way, you've just made the purchase, but here's what I want you to know. There's specific language that I used that really made you take decision. I use the word now a lot of times so that you can realize the decision needs to be made now. I've painted the picture of how painful it would be if you didn't make that decision and what it would look like if you did. These are all sales tactics that I use so that you can understand value because I really want you to take advantage of this program. You would go like,
oh, yes.
Bravo.
No, I think really selling is presenting the opportunity in front of a person who may need it because people don't know what they need. Not until it's presented to them and reminded of the pain that they have. And I think that is the one that it's ethical. The one that you tell them, okay, of course you have an empowered decision to make, but is this what your pain point is all about? If this is the pain that you're having, guess what? I got the answer. I'm here for you. I'm not pushing you to do it, but this is what's going to happen if you don't take this. And that is such an amazing example. So before we wrap up this episode, I wish I could have you here more, but how did you step into your future And what is the future is going to be like for Jason anyway?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of work in personal growth. As I've mentioned, after my episode of humbleness, I started realizing that, hey, maybe I should look at where I'm going to go. So based on the decisions and the way that I act now, I can make a projection of what's going to end up if I do this. And I can actually start having plans that can pull me in a direction that is more aligned to what I truly want in life. And so if I think about the future right now, my book just finished. So I'm going to start working on marketing it, selling it, and publishing it. So it'll be out by the end of 2021.
So excited.
I want to go out and, you know, push this message to more people. I want to start a publishing company, and that actually is called Impact and Integrity Media. So to me, it's like, how do you make people have the most amount of impact, but never let go of that integrity? So if I want to go and work with people that have these amazing products, that have these amazing services, and that really want to believe in the future, that as their transformation and their problem solving be a part of it, I can help them sell it. So I really want to facilitate that with a lot of amazing people. And this is going to be the little empire I want to build for myself. My little kingdom.
Let me sign up for that once that's open. So thanks for letting me know about that. So
there's going to be some good stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. So can you tell us at least actionable steps that people should go for or do, or any advice for those people who are icky in sales, don't feel comfortable in sales or sales in general? Maybe 5 actionable steps, especially for coaches and consultants in order for them to make bank.
Okay. So the first thing I'm going to tell you is for those that have shame and guilt blockages, which is the majority of the people I talk to, especially in this industry. If you feel yucky, icky, think sales is manipulative, you hate it. More than likely, whenever you get into your sales mode, you feel like you're a used car salesman yourself. So here's what I'd love for you to do as an exercise. Make a list of all the most famous people and impactful people that you admire. And then take a moment to elaborate if they are a salespeople and how so. Take your Elon Musk. Is he a salesperson? Write a bit why. I'll tell you, he's a great one. Is it Steve Jobs? Is it Oprah Winfrey? Make a list of the people you admire and then make a thesis around why are they a salespeople, only to realize they all are. Any person of high impact and high influence is a salesperson. Oops, I'll correct that. Every single human on the planet is a salesperson. Because guess what? You want to get on a date? You want your children to obey you? You want to keep the relationship you have alive? All of it is a sales process. So now when you see this, you can choose that whenever you sell, you can step into an identity of someone that you admire so that you don't have these blocks holding you back. There's obviously a lot more you could do as far as healing, looking at your past traumas, your beliefs, but this is a powerful step. You know, if anybody is a fan of Atomic Habits by James Clear, choosing an identity that aligns to the habits you want is a powerful step to eliminate resistance. So when you go to sell, channel your inner Elon Musk, channel your inner Oprah, and then go and show up, and you can show up your way. And that's another key thing that people need to realize is you don't need to be a wolf of Wall Street to be a good salesperson. You need to be you. And when you sell as you, you're going to realize that that's way powerful. So that's one. Number two is I would take time to define the impact for the buyer. This is your problem solving that you were speaking about. But when you love the impact, which is the first love of selling, get crystal clear on that. Like for me, if I go into a company and I consult them on selling, then I love the fact that any buyer who works with me will have more predictable revenue, more higher profit margins that allow them to be more successful as a business. I reduce their rate of failure because they know how to sell. The product that they create starts actually getting into the hands of people that really need it. And so I start solving more problems at a secondary degree. And that's when I go on tangents. Go wild. Like, what is the maximum derivative impact of your work, your product that it happens? If you're coaching an individual, what'll happen to them? Make a list. What'll happen to their social circles? Make a list. And then the third thing I would say, which is the ultimate hack in selling, which is take a moment to think about the impact at a macro scale on the world level. If you exist, you sell what you sell, how is the world a better place? Make a list. That will be the juice that you put in all your marketing material. And that answers the why, which Simon Sinek is always telling you what to start with. You want to start with why? Think of the macro impact of the work that you do. By doing these coaching services, more people get to live in alignment with their core values, live their purpose, find their dreams, and everyone starts doing the right thing that they were born to do on this earth. And now when you talk to people and say, why are you a coach? I'll tell you why. because I believe in a world where everybody's doing the best they can, doing the things they love. And if I can coach people to get to that place, they operate better, less problems in the world, and everything wins. Now I'm like, take my money. Okay. So that's number three. Number four, the best way to love your buyer, second love of selling is love the buyer, is to understand them. Understanding is the language of love. Take the time. We've spoken about this already and you mentioned it. Take the time to get on the phone. Ask them, why did you buy? Anybody who buys from you, why did you buy? Ask them, what was your life before? What is it like now? What is the things that I should know? How do you get to work? How does your relationship? Like, try to get to know them as much as possible so that your language can, you want to be someone that speaks to the heart. And that's the language that gets people to buy, is if you can go through the emotions. And you can only go through the emotions if you understand them. And now you're going to actually start providing products that actually solve the problems. Okay. So that's number four. Number five, I think, is the funnest of the exercises. For anybody who's ever had some anxiety selling their products or services about the price point. Ah, people didn't buy. It's too expensive. It was because I'm not worth it. I must be cheaper. I should lower my price. No. First off, don't fake it till you make it. Don't fake it. Make it. Make your product awesome. Okay. Now, here's a best way to get through this exercise is don't go and discount. That is the lamest way to optimize your product. Instead, make your product 10 times more expensive. Hold up a minute. 10 times more expensive. Add a zero. It's just a zero, just for now. Add a zero and now step into love and abundance and creativity, which is start making a list of what would you need to include in your product so you could feel comfortable selling it 10 times more expensive. Are you a coach? You charge $200 an hour? What would it take for you to feel comfortable selling your services for $2,000 an hour? Now you get creative. You can't discount that. You get creative. Are you training their entire team? Are you providing a complimentary course? Are you flying to them? Are you just, whatever it is your product or service, you now have a bigger budget. So guess what? You can provide more value without having cost constraints. But it is a powerful exercise because when you look back at that list, there's going to be some ideas that you'll be able to innovate or implement at a low cost that will improve your service, will make you more confident about offering it, or you might just find yourself raising your price, and that's a good thing too.
Yeah, you won't be able to give what you can if you don't even have it. And one way of having that is by actually embracing abundance and doing things with love too. I mean, I love saying it, serve with love, right? Sell with love. So thank you so much, Jason. I have a community question for you. How do you get to maintain relationships with people? What was your methodology or what is your methodology?
Are we talking about how do I continue to maintain relationships with all the clients? Mm-hmm.
The sales is relationship as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I love organizing my relationships. So of course I have a CRM, I take notes as much as I can. And, I want to make sure I stay on top because my mind cannot maintain these relationships. I mean, 10, 20, 30, maybe 50 relationships I could keep in my head, but no. A CRM, I think, is very important. Whether you start with a spreadsheet, take some basic notes, you make a list of the people, a couple of contacts, a few notes from your last conversation. If you get in sales, you start having a high touch point with a lot of people. Your brain has limited capacity. Start using tools that can assist you in maintaining those relationships. And I've heard some people say like, oh my God, it's so impersonal if I have a CRM or anything. It's like, no. Having organized information shows that you care enough to organize that information so that you can be personal with as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And so don't think of it as something that makes you impersonal. Look at something that's making you take a little more effort because you care.
Yeah. You get to systemize things and it's so, so important. Something I have learned from you guys is to have system, process, and structure. Always have those in place, even in with its sales. Oh, so yeah. Again, thanks so much, Jason. Do you have any last words or anything else that you want to share to the audience? Maybe your book?
Yeah, well, what I have is actually there's five loves in selling. So if anybody's curious to go deeper into it, I just tell them, come and follow me on Instagram, send me a direct message just saying you want to have the cheat sheet. So I built a little PDF that asks you power questions on each of the five loves of selling so you can find yourself stepping into love if ever you find yourself hesitating. Mm-hmm. Just send me a direct message. I'll send it over for free to anybody who asks.
Okay. Or maybe you could just send me a link and I'll just put it on the show notes. So
perfect.
That would also help you. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Jason. I've been looking forward to this day, and I'm just so, so happy that you said yes, and you're here on my show. Amazing. I'm really, really grateful. So to those of you who are listening to Dear Driven and Ambitious, I hope you enjoy today's episode. It was really, this is one of those things on my checklist that I want to have Jason here because, hello, he got this served with love anyway. So my selling with love anyway, might as well have it on my show. So so thanks again, Jason. And to you guys, again, this ends today's episode. Do drop me a message on Instagram. It's Cassie Pajarillo, or on LinkedIn. And do share whatever you picked up on this episode through your stories, maybe, and we'd love to feature it. Or if you got questions, go ahead and message me, or go ahead and go to Jason's Instagram. He has a cheat sheet, so go ahead. And we'll endeavor to discuss more of this in the succeeding episodes. Again, this is your chief encourager, your host, Cassie Pajarillo. Braganza, drive ambition, serve love, and be awesome always. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
You just finished listening to another episode of the Ambitious Tribe podcast by Cassie Pajarillo. If you liked today's episode, make sure to leave Cassie a review on iTunes and share this podcast with your friends on social media. It's also available on Spotify and Google Podcast. Don't forget to tag Cassie Pajarillo on Instagram or message her straight on LinkedIn. You may also head over to the Ambitious Tribe with a Plan Facebook group and be encouraged by soul-aligned and ambitious humans on the planet. Remember, you can definitely build a better business.